September 30th marks Orange Shirt Day, a day to honor residential school survivors and remember the children who never made it home as part of Canada's Indian residential school system. And this year, the Woodland Cultural Centre will mark the day with a special event and the reopening of the former Mohawk Institute as a historical museum. So joining us to talk about the significance of the day and what visitors can expect is Heather George, Executive Director of the Woodland Cultural Centre. So thank you for taking some time today, Heather.
You're so welcome.
And so this year, Woodland is marking Orange Shirt Day with a very significant step with the reopening of the former Mohawk Institute. Can you tell us about what all is planned for September 30th and what visitors can expect?
For sure. So we are opening the front gates around 9 o'clock and speeches start around 10. So from about 10 till 10:45, we have a series of different speakers, including some of the survivors from the Mohawk Institute. And then for the rest of the day, the building is open on hourly self-guided tours, and folks can just come on the day and get a bracelet for a specific time, and they can go through the building. We're expecting a large number of people, about 3,000 people. So we do want to let people know that if they aren't in the very first group into the building, that they don't need to worry because there's also other programming. We have film showings. We have survivor panels. We're also officially releasing Rick Hill's new book, Behind the Brick. And we also have some art programming on the site. And it's the last day for the Indigenous Arts Exhibition. So there's lots of other things that people can do while they're waiting to get into the building.
And just talking about all the work that's been put into this, how does it feel to be opening the doors to the public?
A little bit tiring, to be honest, but I'm really glad that we're at this point. Really, when I think about it and reflect on it, I'm just so grateful that the community and that the survivors decided that it was important to keep this building, and that all of the staff and the donors and survivors have supported this process of construction over the last decade, because it's been such a long project and a challenging project in lots of different ways. So a mix of tiredness and also a lot of gratitude.
And what are some of the things that you hope visitors can take away when they walk through those doors next Tuesday?
I think the most powerful part of the interpretation is that the voice of survivors is in the building. So it's through audio listening stations, but there's also quotes everywhere throughout the building, on the steps, on the desks, on tables, on walls. And those are all direct quotes from survivors from the work that Rick Hill did interviewing them. And I think that that's the most powerful part of the building now, is actually hearing from them what they experienced while they were here. And I think it'll be hard for people. It can be really hard to be in the space. It can be upsetting. There's a lot of emotion tied to it. It can also make people pretty angry. It makes me angry sometimes. But I hope that they will also have some hope and compassion for each other and for survivors, and that this is never forgotten, that the history of residential schools and what our family members went through is never forgotten.
And working with the survivors throughout this reopening process, have you been able to get feedback from them on it and just what their feelings are being able to be a part of that process?
I think the thing that stands out to me the most, what's really, struck me about survivors being in the building. And I think probably they're still processing too. It is a lot of change. It looks a lot different. But the simple act of putting a doorway back in the front hallway between the Indian visiting room and what was the headmaster's office. And Diane told me how important that was to her and how much it meant to her. And from a construction perspective, that's probably one of the easiest things we've done. But that doorway was so important and tied to her memories and the loss that she experienced as a child here. And so it reminded me how much of the physical presence of this building is important to survivors. And I'm really glad that we were able to do that.
And with the event growing year over year and bringing not only Six Nations community members, but also a broader audience to the cultural center as well, what's the importance in not having just Six Nations community attending, but also that group of people in attendance to learn about the history of the Mohawk Institute as well?
I really think that, we all talk about truth and reconciliation, and it has truth first. And I think we're very much still in the truth-telling phase for us as Indigenous community members and you know, family of survivors and for the survivors. It's this project and this reopening of the building, I think it provides that opportunity to ensure that people experience the truth in the place that it happened. And I hope that it doesn't just sort of capture their minds, but also their hearts. Because I think part of the challenge of reconciliation is that we are sort of expecting non-Indigenous people to do it because it's a good thing to do and it's the right thing to do. But I think until people really feel it emotionally, sometimes they have a hard time prioritizing it amongst all the other things that they're doing in their lives. And I honestly think that good nations can teach their good history and their bad history. And so Canada needs to be able to face that it has a history of genocide, and all Canadians need to know that history.
And just for anyone in attendance, is there a message that you hope people can leave the grounds with?
I hope they leave the grounds with the understanding that this is a start, that coming here is sort of bearing witness to this history is sort of a first action, and that there's so much more work that needs to be done around the 94 calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It's the 10th anniversary of that report this year, and we've only accomplished 15 of those calls to action. And so I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to lobby politicians and make them understand at all levels of government that this is something that is important to Canadian citizens and that they need to support Indigenous communities' well-being and the work of healing.
And just lastly, Heather, how can people who can't attend in person still support or learn about the Woodland Cultural Center, the Mohawk Institute, and anything else that you guys have going on right now?
For sure. So if people can't come in person, we're open 50 weeks out of the year. So it's certainly, make a plan to come here eventually. We're open every day except Monday from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. But we also do virtual programming. So once a month, we usually run like a virtual tour or a lunch and learn. So you just have to pay attention to our social media posts for that. But also, I think it's a really great way if you want to get together with like a group of your friends or your coworkers or say like your community organization or church group, and we can host virtual programs for any group. They just have to contact us and book that. And the same if people want to come on a group tour, they just reach out to Woodland and we can book group tours as well. I think it's really powerful to do this work with other people so that you have someone to talk to, you have other people who are having the experience with you.
All right, Heather, thank you again for doing this and best of luck with the event happening next Tuesday. And definitely looking forward to seeing everything that's planned for such an important day.
Thank you so much.
I'm Andrew Dow, and this news story is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, which supports the creation of original civic news.